Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On James Bond. For more information about the links and the news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com. Hey!
Hello, my geeklings!
Bama! Bama!
Wait, are we doing a James Bond episode?
Yes, Moneypenny, yes.
I thought we were doing a bondage episode.
No, I've got him in my shite.
I was wondering why you were wearing that little number.
There's also been...
It's comfortable.
There's been James Blondage, there's been Jane Blondage, Jane in Bondage. Never mind.
Hi, my name is Aaron Hendricks. I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
My name is Donald Marshall. I'm a video game professional and a writer here in Hollywood, California, and I too am a geek.
My name is Matt Yang King, and I am also in Los Angeles, and I'm an actor and a geek.
My name is Pete Robinson, and I am a writer, although we're striking, here in Los Angeles, and a director. And I am a geek.
I would say even with the missing tooth, you're more handsome than striking.
As a writer-producer, do you have to pick it yourself?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's very difficult.
Like your left hand's trying to beat up your right.
Mm-hmm. He's constantly crossing the line.
That's true.
Crossing the strike line.
And the other hand, yeah, then pulling myself back. No, don't do it!
Don't cross the line.
Scab! I have to walk and look at myself in the mirror and go, you scab, you dirty scab.
You dirty scab.
Anyway, yes.
There's a good lead-in for a bondage episode, too.
There's some goings-on here in Hollywood. As some of you may or may not know, there is a writer's strike.
So it's been all over the news.
Well, here.
Well, it wasn't when I was in Michigan.
Television is big
business
in the entire United States.
I'm sure everybody knows about
it. It's our number one export, you know?
When I was in Michigan, it was big news as well.
So. Yeah, well. It will be affecting everybody here soon. If everyone remembers Star Trek Next Generation Season 2, you'll realize that strikes do affect your television.
Let it happen again.
I have booked more things since the strike started than I did before the strike, so God only knows why.
I've been getting weird emails from random writers just cold calling any kind
any
of
work?
Company. Yeah. Do you have any writing you need done? Pamphlets, menus.
That's
anything.
Probably one now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the Bat phone. Anything happened geeky in your geek week?
Started playing BioShock.
Okay.
I started playing on Halo 3, and for about 8 games, I ran into the best guys in the world.
Wow.
I went from my friends list being about 15 to 25, maybe, right? To it's now at 75.
Whoa.
And literally, it
on
was based,
Xbox Live?
It was on Xbox Live. And it wasn't like, you suck. It was just like really great people that I met. And I don't know what happened. But it was like it all
lined up. So it's cool
up.
People, not necessarily
really,
the best, like, kill
they're not
you
necessarily
instant
the
players.
Best players.
Yeah,
although,
you've hooked up with the friends that I work, the guys I work with.
Yeah,
like Wookiee and those guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Them as well. But these are guys separate from that. So
okay.
I don't know whether or not there's a new trend with Xbox 360.
No.
You know, it's weeded out, you know, the fact that it's been crapping out. Weeded out everybody, but
I've been reading a lot of comics lately. I just finished Identity Crisis, which I loaned to Peter.
I read it too. That is a fantastic comic.
It's hands down the best DC comic I've read since Kingdom Come. I cried twice over the course of the comic.
Really?
Book. It revisits very minor characters that were big in the 80s and 90s, and they're not even superheroes.
Hmm.
They're like
a Firestorm in there.
Yes.
Hey!
Yes.
And it's the only comic I ever collected.
It is the end of Firestorm. And it's one hell of an end.
Wow, I should send that to a friend of mine.
Very elegantly done. You know, you'd be proud of him.
Yeah. Aaron's like sitting with the comic weeping.
Yeah. It was really... And not only did they finish Firestorm, but they finished in an even more obscure character, his girlfriend.
Oh.
That kind of... Flaming Bird Lady.
Yeah.
Vaguely remember her.
Phoenix something.
Firebird or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember. But I was very impressed by the comic. I really enjoyed it.
We should give people the one-liner of what it's about, because it's pretty It's pretty great.
The basic premise is somebody starts killing family members of superheroes.
Oh.
And it's about the reaction of the entire superhero community.
Yeah, you can't.
To that.
They can't get at the superheroes, but they can get at their families.
Which is the reason why you have secret identities.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it's the question of, you know, why do you do this? And the writing was good, and the artwork was good, but the two of them together worked really well.
Hmm.
Like I can't say either one of them was amazing, but the two of them were so in sync with each other.
Set in modern times or alternate history?
Modern times.
Okay.
And it actually did change the DC universe right before they erased it and started over again, from what I heard.
Wow.
Hmm.
So
we saw 30 Days Suck.
Yeah.
30 Days, One Sucky Night.
30 Days that could have been done in one night, but wasn't.
I told you.
Yeah, well.
Listen to Uncle. You just thought I hate everything, so you.
No. We knew.
Well,
it was
you
not
do
good.
Hate everything, Eric. Well,
you do hate
well,
everything
because they keep putting out this type of
but,
crap.
But you know, Don,
I'm with you this time.
A clock is right twice a day. The broken clock is right twice a day.
This is true.
No. Look, we knew it wasn't good. We saw the Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Stuff.
We walked into it knowing what we were in for.
But you know, sometimes you go to see something that should have been good because it was a great concept.
Yeah.
Just to see how they messed
up.
Not
only was it a great concept, it even has a great ending concept. And yet,
but we won't talk about it. It's a spoiler. But
they blew
it.
That's the best part of the movie, the end.
The end.
Yeah.
And it sucks still.
Yeah, they still blew it.
Well,
and we've seen the ending before, though. I mean, it's the other blockbuster movies in the past 5 years have ended the same way.
Not that much. I mean, it's not a cliche, let me put it that way.
Yeah.
It's not a cliche yet. Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, I played Halo and I played BioShock.
Yeah.
And I just started.
We both finished BioShock the same day.
I finished BioShock, and I must say, I actually kind of got weepy at the end of it.
Oh, Peter, softy.
I actually, Peter got the good ending for BioShock. I got the evil ending.
Yeah.
Because I know all of you, and I knew all of you would get the good
ending.
Why do
you
so I want
kill
the
little
one.
Girls, Don?
Because it's fun and they taste good.
I can't wait to see how you go down Mass Effect's route.
Oh, my God.
Mass Effect is my definite buy, which is...
You know why, Don? You know why? Because it's okay to kill little girls, but it's not okay to put little girls in slavery for the rest of their life. This was just an even killing. Well, when you had it on the Jedi Knights 2, there's that option where you can put somebody into slavery and
oh, I didn't
leave
get to that point.
You leave them on a planet for a bunch of years, and that's when you couldn't go dark side. You told me that before.
I vaguely remember that. Yeah,
that was drawing the line.
But with BioShock, I mean, part of it for me, and the reason why I was able to get away with it, is it's set in the 1950s, right?
Right.
And the in the 1950s, everything is black and white.
Right.
So they are incredibly evil, necrotic little things with alien worms inside of them.
Right.
You know?
You have weird ways of setting up stuff
it's
in your brain.
It's the 1950s. It's black and white. It's all good. No,
until you got three-fourths into the game, you went, oh,
yeah.
It's all gray. this game is gray.
Yeah, they did a backflip on me.
I do need to say, now, have you finished
but
BioShock?
The evil ending?
I have not finished it. Okay. So.
Have you all seen the evil ending?
I have not seen the evil ending.
No.
If you don't want to play it again and get the evil ending, you can just go on YouTube and see it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is what I did with a good ending.
And it's okay.
It's okay.
You know.
Yeah, the very, you know.
Actually, it's sort of what you'd expect it to be.
Actually, in fact, I'll tell you that if you kill two girls, that's all it takes. You will get the evil ending.
Oh, really?
That's all it takes.
Okay.
Yeah, but I got I got the objective where I saved them all. Got to save them all.
Oh, I got that too.
I did that too. But you could literally play this game to the very.
I got the benefit too. You just need to find them all and do something with them.
No, actually, there's different benefits on either way.
Oh, no, but I got the achievement.
I did too.
No,
you got the achievement where you killed them all.
No, I got an achievement said located and dealt with all girls.
No,
I got the
you
saved.
Dealt with all girls. He saved.
I got
them
the
all.
Savior achievement. No.
Well, I got another one. Meme.
So, but no, literally, you could get almost to the very end and save it. You know, like right in save the last two girls and get the good ending, and then get almost to the very end, and then and then go back just a couple saves and then finish it and see the other ending.
Oh, yeah, okay. Or you could look up on YouTube.
There's that too.
Yeah.
But the good ending I found very touching, and I actually teared up.
Yeah.
You know.
Aww. Well, Call of Duty 4 is out. I bought it. Haven't been able to play it. My Xbox just came back from the doctor, from the Xbox doctor, but I haven't been able to get on. I also got Orange Box. Played a little bit of Portal. Awesome game.
Portal looks like it would make me vomit.
It's not that bad, but it is trippy as hell.
Because Half-Life, literally made me nauseous.
Yeah, but
well, you had
guys...
no problem with Halo 3, though, right?
No problem with Halo 3.
Yeah, Halo 3, I was heaving in the bathroom.
Halo
was,
1, oh, when we good. First played it on your TV...
We both got sick.
We both got sick.
Yeah. Well, that's because you had one of those, like, TVs in the wooden case, you know, thing.
Yeah, I mean, Don actually still does the dial
ears,
gesture when he's talking about turning the channel.
It's true.
Next week is Assassin's Creed.
Oh!
So Guitar Hero 3 is already out. We've got, I think, Crysis comes out on the PC.
When's Rock Band?
Rock Band comes out in this, right...
Is it December?
No, it's like right before Thanksgiving, which is awesome.
For the three listeners who care, Virtua Fighter 5 is now out.
Yes.
I've been playing that nonstop.
Yeah.
And
it's awfully pretty.
It's awfully pretty. It's the prettiest of all of them by
lag,
a long shot.
Lag online?
Non-existent.
Whoa.
Completely non-existent.
Nice.
What about loading times, like in terms of loading up to get into a game?
Noticeable, but not annoying.
Okay.
You know? But my big problem with it is, one, the user interface is the ugliest I've ever seen in any game. I mean, it's ugly. It's like Atari 5200 ugly.
Wow.
Right?
Bad.
And then when you sit down to play with people online, you make a match, you fight them, and then you get shunted out and you have to go find a new match.
But you've only done ranked games.
I've only done ranked games.
So you might be able to play like in a more of a party mode if it's in an unranked.
I hope so. I'm probably going to give that a try soon.
Yeah, you should try it because ranked games, they're trying to keep people from you know, having
Beating
your friends
lose.
Yeah.
The other problem I saw with ranked games is they don't try and pair people of generally the same skill level.
That's a
You
problem.
Just get thrown into a pit and you get the first person you pick.
Yeah, that's stupid. That's
and so, like, I'm, what, like fifth Dan now? And I'm getting people, like, from ninth Q who just don't stand a shot against me.
Well,
you know? That's not fair to them.
What's even the point of having a ranked game if you're not if they're pairing ranked people?
The ranking system doesn't make much sense to me. It's you get 4 points if you win, 1 point if you lose. And you just keep going up according to that system.
I mean, have you guys seen, let's see, a couple years ago, Bungie released the math on how the ranked games work in Halo 2?
Mm-hmm.
It was like 50 pages of math.
Wow.
Like, it's complex shit. It's not like, you know, 1 point for this, 2 points for that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
I find it a little disappointing. But that said, it's the third type of fighting game. You know, there's Tekken, there's Street Fighter, and then there's Virtua Fighter.
Mm-hmm. Rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat.
I'm waiting for a new one.
Yeah.
I'm happy with it.
I know you are.
Yeah.
Mostly. All right. Anything else before news?
My friend Dave might come on the show, and he just joined a new gaming company which has a neural interface to video games. So I'll talk to him. We'll see if we can get him on the show.
I remember the earliest version of that in the late 80s. My father got it. It was a stress reduction video game. And you strapped this thing to your forehead, and then you had to stare at a screen, and there was a little balloon, and you had to focus on your stress to lift the balloon and then actively relax to let the balloon sink. And the balloon was like going through an obstacle course and you had to raise it and lower it.
They have that at E3 every year. There's always something just like that.
Come on, late 80s, like, man.
Well, remember, 80s, who was it?
Those were graphics.
Who was it that was with me where they had one where you had to get, quote, in the zone and they would give you boosts for your driving games and stuff? So if you totally, like, could chill out, you would give you like extra speed in like your PlayStation 2 games and all this. I was like,
very odd.
Okay, whatever. Cool. Well, that'd be interesting. News.
Cue the music.
All right. Who's going to start? I actually don't have any news.
All right. I got a really funky one that I thought was really neat. There's a multi-limbed girl in India
who's
in surgery.
Limbs, huh? Oh, yeah.
She has 8 limbs. And doctors in India are operating on a 2-year-old child who was born with 4 arms and 4 legs, and they say that the surgery is going well. I don't know whether or not she came out of it successfully.
This is just rife for all sorts of really awful jokes.
Yeah.
I saw a diagram of her body. It was very interesting.
I saw a picture of her body.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
She
had a cellular twin.
Okay,
it grew. She's, I believe, 5 or 6 years old,
mm-hmm.
and the cellular twin has no head,
right?
And they're connected at the spine, so she has extra arms and extra legs.
The spine via the pelvis,
yeah.
So it's like one continuous spine going from her head down to her butt, and then out of her butt into someone else.
Yeah.
So they're like, it's like they're sitting on each other's butt.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Wow. I have to say,
It makes me wonder if the diagram of Shiva, you know, the like eight-armed... It's Shiva that has eight arms, right?
Lakshmi, mm-hmm. actually.
What's it? Lakshmi.
Lakshmi. And her name is actually Lakshmi.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing that I thought was that her village thinks that she's the reincarnation of Lakshmi.
Yeah.
And is violently against her getting this operation because they believe that she's this reincarnation of a goddess.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're standing in the way of it to help this girl actually reach teenagehood.
It's amazing that she's 5 years old. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing that, you know, what the body is very...
Can you imagine that birth, though?
Yeah. It's... yeah. Wow. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Well, thank God that somebody has the forethought to go to a modern hospital and...
Yeah, well, they said the villagers and some of the relations were not so keen about going ahead with the surgery, but the parents are looking to the future, and they were very, very keen and motivated to have medical intervention. So she's got a 5 to 25% chance, and I'll check and find out whether or not she survived.
Nice.
Well, J.K.
Go, little girl. Go, little girl.
Yeah.
Go, little Lakshmi.
Got to root for her.
Yeah.
J.K. Rowling has completed her first book since she finished the blockbusting series of Harry Potter.
Wow.
It's going to be in demand.
Is this Beetle the Bard?
It is, in fact, Beetle the Bard.
Oh.
Who's Beetle the Bard?
The Bard is a book mentioned in the last book of the Harry Potter series.
Oh, so okay. They can't... She can't get out
of... No.
It's
a book of fairy tales.
Okay.
It's quintessential to the series.
Okay.
But here, there's a bit of a twist to this. There will only be 7 copies of the book ever made.
Yes. She's already written them.
She has handwritten them. And hand-illustrated them. They are leather-bound with semi-precious jewels set into the covers. 6 of them have been given to friends. And 1 is being given to a charity fundraising auction. Wow. 1 copy will be sold to raise money for a children's charity, while the others will be given away as gifts. The volume will be auctioned at Sotheby's on December 13th with a starting price of £30,000. Proceeds will go to the Children's Voice, a charity that helps vulnerable children.
That's going
to
be about 5 minutes. So that's going to be like
that's like saying
pounds.
Starting bid $1.
Yeah.
Well, that's good that it's being sold to charity. Because at first I was like,
started it with a starting bid of $1.
Yeah, I know.
Would you think they should have? Because I would have gone on and put $1 in at that starting bid. You'd have got 1 million people.
You'd have had 1 shot.
That's the problem with everybody.
Yeah, so you get 1 million people who try their 1 shot at getting $1 million for the children's charity.
What's the point?
Because you get $1 million extra dollars for a children's charity, whereas...
No.
It's an auction.
Yeah, it's not who... It's the highest bidder
auction.
Pays, not everybody pays.
Oh. Well, that's no
you
fun.
Don't bid a buck and then it goes away forever.
Oh.
You bid
damn,
a buck
I
and then
$34,000
and someone
I was trying to be nice. You guys just suck, you capitalists.
Just explain the
auction.
Rules, Matt.
All right, fine.
Well, I can't wait. I'm going to have an auction, in-house auction.
Yeah,
get Matt over here.
All the bids start at $1, Matt.
Yeah.
I'll bet $1.
Aaron, do you have anything?
No.
Okay. In that case, so we've all heard about Big Brother spying on America's internet data.
Yeah.
And now it's been confirmed by a worker at AT&T named former employee, Mark Klein. And he said, or alleged Wednesday, that he worked at AT&T for a couple years, and one of his jobs was to oversee internet operations in San Francisco, helping maintain optical splitters that diverted data en route to and from AT&T customers. One day that he found out that these splitters were hardwired into a secret room on the 6th floor, which he says basically they keep for the NSA. So the NSA,
NSA slash CIA.
So he's actually saying that the NSA slash CIA has a floor at the AT&T building.
Yeah. Not floor, a
room.
And they have sophisticated data mining equipment that they keep there, and they have access to basically anything that AT&T deals with, they have access to.
Well, I heard this guy on NPR, and it's actually worse than that.
Yeah.
Because he said the basic analogy that he gave is that this is a pipeline.
Yeah,
you know, with, I think he said something like 12 gigabits per second or something like that worth of information that's coming through this pipeline, which he said was basically this one Encyclopedia Britannica per second coming through it. And he said the problem is the pipeline is shunting information from AT&T. It's also shunting information from Sprint,
T-Mobile,
from
T-Mobile.
Yeah, exactly. But it's all being shunted through this basic screen filter.
That's slowing everything down, A.
Well, it's but all of that information is going directly to the NSA and the CIA. So it's not just AT&T that's being screened through
filter. It's anything that goes through the AT&T
They're
pipeline.
Getting everything. And it's not like, and he was like, under, it's not warranted unless you're looking for specific things. They're getting everything. You have to, you know, a warrant has to be specific. So what they're doing is absolutely unconstitutional. It's not even,
if it's true.
He said it's, well, he said it's absolutely true. And he's gone on major news agencies saying that it is.
Yeah.
So how could we cause a little feedback loop?
Yeah.
It seems like we could just have to send a piece of information and tell everybody we know to send a piece of information that will start causing a chain reaction to get it shut down. Go onto our forums.
That would be called a virus, Aaron.
Illegal. If it's searching for words, you make the machine work hard. So go onto our website and let's start devising a way of sending out words.
Let's see what your ideas are for shutting down the system.
Yeah, go to our start up a topic and see if you have any clever words that would. Well, okay, wait, maybe not.
Yeah,
clever ideas.
So my news story, my second news story, is that a whistleblower from AT&T was found dead recently.
Really?
He had just. Anyway, moving on to that.
I was like, wow, he doesn't even have a piece of paper for that.
He actually wouldn't. One of the reasons why I really believe this guy was that he said he would not come forward until he found out that the New York Times was already doing a story on it. And he was like, oh, I'm a little safe because it's already been released.
Yeah.
And then he retired. He got out of his job. And then he released the story. Because he didn't want to have anything coming at him. Anyway, there's a copyright row over one of the most ambitious fan films ever made. And it's probably not going to be ever shown before an audience. 4 years in planning, Damnatus, made by German fans of the Warhammer 40,000 game, cost more than 10,000 euros, took months to film, employs 11 principal actors, dozens of extras, and sophisticated post-production special effects. Now the finished film runs 110 minutes. But Juan Vu, director and producer of the movie, said Damnatus creators have now given up trying to get the film in front of an audience. Nottingham-based Games Workshop created Warhammer, which we all know and love, and they said basically that the Warhammer tabletop game will not have any fan films made about it, and they're shutting down production.
You know, that's like the stupidest business decision they could ever make.
Well, okay, you're right, probably. They kind of have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because if you don't protect your property, then legally you lose it.
Yeah, they're basically saying...
Except Star Wars lets you make fan films.
Yeah, well, maybe. Yeah, that's true.
Star Wars absolutely lets you make fan films.
But there's a lot of rules for that. They don't let you use any copyrighted material for that.
And well, I mean...
Like, you can't say Darth Vader walks in. They will shut that down.
Yes.
You can't use a character in a Star Wars film.
Then how do people always put Darth Maul in it?
Yeah, Darth Vader shows up.
They're out. I'm not saying that they're not out there. I'm just saying LucasArts doesn't like that shit.
Hmm. Well, actually, I don't think you do see Darth Maul. You see other creatures that are the same race as he is.
Troops.
Here's the deal. Here's the deal. You're right. They should have sent a cease and desist letter and then maybe called it a day and said, okay, that's what LucasArts and other people do. You know, they send the letter, their lawyers say, and like, they don't really, really care if Troops was made.
Yeah.
Cause you're right. It helps everything out.
What they're saying is exactly what you're saying, Aaron. They basically said that German copyright law is the heart of the dispute. And they've said, in a lengthy response explaining the ban on Damnatus, Mr. Jones, the head of Warhammer, said to lose control of Warhammer or Warhammer 40,000 is simply unthinkable. So we must be vigilant and perhaps sometimes seemingly heartless in our decisions to safeguard for the future success of the business and the hobby.
Right.
You know what he should do?
But
he should buy the movie from them for nothing. I mean, for like $10 or something so it can be distributed.
Yeah. Why not?
You know. How much money did the guy spend?
10,000.
Yeah. 10,000 euros.
Here's the deal. Yeah. I know there's fam films guys who do this all the time, and sometimes they get away with it, and sometimes they don't. Like, these Star Trek guys, they are on thin ice, and as far as I'm concerned, I totally encourage it. You know, spend as much damn money as you want, but do not be surprised when the letter comes saying you can't do it. It's happened to me. I started up a Star Trek GURPS fan site where I collected fan published rules to convert to be able to play GURPS with Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And I'm a graphic designer, and I made all these. It looked awesome. It looked like a professional site. And that's when people freaked out.
Yeah.
The more professional it looks, the worse the company is freaked out. If you have a crappy Star Wars movie, they're not super concerned about that. Okay. They're concerned about the one that freaking looks awesome.
Yeah. Yes.
Then they try to stop you down. I didn't put on a website anything that wasn't already out there. I asked all these people if I could use their rules that had been out there for 6 or 7 years. I put it on my site and made it beautiful looking, mm-hmm. and that's when the letter showed up.
Yeah. I think Star Wars and George Lucas actually have specific rules as to how...
They absolutely have specific rules.
How you can film what you film.
You can't use any of the music that they have. I believe, like you said, you can't use the major characters. You can expand the outside universe,
yeah,
but you cannot change the core storyline.
And that is a gift by LucasArts.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
A lot of places are not like that. They specifically came out. In fact, I think they released a number of sound effects for filmmakers to specifically use. They said, we're allowing you to do this. Mm-hmm. Here are the real rules, though. You can't use character names. You can't use... Yeah. We don't want to see any of these.
And you cannot make a profit on it.
Yeah.
You can show it for free, but you cannot make a cent on it.
Absolutely.
Sure.
It's been a great move for them because it's really helped keep their franchise alive.
Also, they can't, you know, there was no possible way with the popularity of Star Wars that they could ever keep ahead.
Let me explain one series that they did, X-Files. There is hardly any X-Files fan movies and fan sites with pictures of them. You know, fan sites have pictures and all that. That's all illegal, but no one tells them that's what keeps shows alive. Yeah. Fox sent out a letter to every single one of them back in the day, and they shut them all down. And guess what? No one gives a fuck about X-Files anymore.
Yeah.
They're making a new movie. I don't think anyone's screaming
for it. They are making a new movie?
Yeah, they're making a new... Yeah, you know, people are going to watch it. I'll go watch it, but no one's like...
You're
screaming
not passionate
over
the way you are. I mean, Star Wars has kept it alive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And every year they've got a Star Wars fan
film. Also, Star Wars is a little bit larger than Xbox.
I mean, I'm always surprised by these things. Like, you know, freaking Hercules and Xena still going.
Yep.
Yeah.
Babylon 5 still going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Anyway,
right, Firefly. Now, one season. Still going.
Yeah. But the Games Workshop, those guys are...
They need to get out of their own way a little
bit. Yeah, they are crazy. That's a hardcore company.
Yeah, and that's a lot of...
Yeah.
They should figure out a way to let them show it.
Well,
it's a great publicity thing for them.
Yeah.
I just wanted to throw out there, you know, we've already touched on it briefly. There is a WGA writer's strike going on in Hollywood right now. And one of the interesting side notes is not just the writers are walking out, but the showrunners are leaving their shows.
Yes, has been great.
For those of you not in the industry, a showrunner is usually a writer who's elevated to sort of being in charge of not just the writing, but sort of the conceptualization and the execution of the entire series.
Mm-hmm.
With the showrunners walking out, the studios are sort of banking on having these finished scripts to last them through the New Year's. But with the showrunners leaving, they're finding they can't execute them.
Yeah.
Well, and often now the writers are leaving, the actors are leaving when the
Steve
showrunners
Carell.
Are
gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Steve Carell is a writer on the series.
He's a writer as well. You
know? But he walked off the
As a
show.
WGA member, he has the right to walk
so
off.
Well, Seth,
but he's
Seth
not just walking off as a writer. He's walking off as an actor as well. I mean, he's not saying I'm not going to write. He's saying I'm not acting either.
Yeah. Right. Those people have power that most people don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Seth MacFarlane.
What are you
going to
do?
With Family Guy.
Fire him.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, Steve
Seth
Carell.
Seth MacFarlane is the show. Steve Carell is the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know? So he's those are bigger moves for people who have the power to fight.
But these people having the balls to do that is actually putting the industry in a much different position.
I have been waiting for big names to do this for the last two strikes that we've had, and it's been like, thank God, some of the bigger names are actually stepping up and grabbing some. You know,
there are some horror stories out there, though, of like some of the tactics and threats that are being made against the writers.
There will be,
For instance, in the studios. I mean, this is a side note most people don't know about. A lot of the assistants are already getting the axe. You know, yeah. Secretaries, support people. All getting fired. Anyone who was assistant to the writers, gone.
Yeah, everyone's cracking down to save money because they feel like this is going to be a long fight.
One of the showrunners that is out on strike right now is the showrunner for Big Bang Theory. Mm-hmm. Now, people who listened to last episode know I wasn't especially impressed by what I saw of it, but I will watch that show now, having heard about this guy. It's his first series.
Chuck Lorre?
I don't know his name, probably. It's his first series. You know, he worked forever to try and get his dream show up. It's finally up. Not even eight episodes into the season, he's out on strike. Mm-hmm. He stands with the guild. He goes out on the line and receives a letter from the studio saying, if you are not at work tomorrow, we will charge you for each day's production that you are out. Mm-hmm. The entirety of the production will be charged to you personally.
Well, this isn't Chuck Lorre, because Chuck Lorre is a big executive at CBS.
Okay. that ain't him.
Okay.
So he is sitting there. I heard the other showrunner they were interviewing talking about this guy sitting on the sidewalk shaking in terror, not knowing what this could do to his career, mm-hmm. and still not going in. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and the things that they're asking for, I mean, to my mind, I don't know the scope of it. They're asking for 2.5% of the profits on DVD sales.
Well, have 2.5% and they're asking for 8%, right?
Well, what you should do is you should go to, I believe it's called Hollywood United, and look at something, or go to YouTube and search for something called Why We Fight. Okay? And it's about 3 minutes long, and it very clearly explains. But just to make this a little clearer so some people understand, basically what happened is that when DVD came around, the producer said, look, DVD is a new format. They said, do not kill the baby before it's a chance to grow up.
Yeah, we don't know if we can make any money, so don't make us give you this. We'll take care of you later.
Don't make us give you what we, you know, what you have on VHS. Let us have like sort of a lower rate. And so the writer said, sure, we'll do that. And then when it came around, when DVD started making money, they said, okay, now it's time for you to pay up. And they said, well, you know, you're kind of in a weak negotiating position right now, so fuck you. You know, that's what we're going to give you. Right. Big heaping helping of fuck you.
Now, here, obviously, there's a bunch of writers here talking about this. There's another side. One of the things that there is a problem that they are having is that a lot of contracts from other guilds are coming up, and this will set the tone. So if they give in to something to the writers, they're going to start having to give it up to actors and directors
both of whom are perceived as being more important to a production than a writer.
Well, everybody thinks they're more important than, you know.
But I think it's safe to say the general public perceives the actors and directors as being more of a draw.
Right. Well, that's part of the problem is like, you know,
even
it depends on what movie you're
looking. Negotiate less than the writers.
Yeah. I mean, for example, the Transformers movie, I would say the writer was less important than the head special effect artist.
Yeah.
And they don't get shit.
I would say the head lead writer was a hell of a lot less important than Megan Fox.
I know. She should have gotten a huge percentage of that damn movie.
Or perhaps her cosmetic surgeon.
Yes, exactly.
Just saying.
But, she doesn't have but let's also
that girl's all natural, boy. Mm-hmm. What you talking about?
And now they're doing the same thing with new media.
Yeah.
Now, this time the writers are saying, look, we want our DVD profits and we want our DVD participation, and we also want to get new media. I mean, they're very
meaning
clear.
Internet viewing,
yes,
download,
whatever new.
Everything
iPods,
is moving to the internet. I mean,
phones.
DVDs are going to be outdated very soon.
Yeah.
You know, because why do you buy a DVD when you can just download it and have it right now?
And right now, everything on the internet is considered promotional.
Yeah.
And so they claim they're making zero money off of it.
Right. Bull crap.
You know, it's pretty bullshit.
Yeah.
But,
all right.
Okay. Enough of our problems.
But the reason why it's a geek issue also is because this season, as we went over last episode, we have a lot of geek fare.
And
right?
Some of that might be canceled.
And a lot of it's already being canned. The rumors I'm hearing already, Moonlight is going to be the first under
shucks.
The axe.
Oh, my God.
I heard Chuck is in danger, but probably not that much.
No.
And I know Pushing Daisies has stopped production. It was one of the first ones to stop production.
Well, they're all going to be stopping here soon, for sure.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, it depends on how many scripts they had in advance. Pushing Daisies was one of the first to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right. As long as we're on the subject, IBM just released a new report, and they said that they're forecasting that there's going to be a greater disruption in the ad industry in the next 5 years than the previous 50 years combined. Okay. They think that the changes that we're starting to see with the internet, with how we view things, that they're increasing exponentially. So a couple of the things that they said is that one of the things that's obviously happening is that people are watching things on their DVR now, and they tend to skip their ads,
mm-hmm.
okay, which is a big problem if you are a network. One of the second things that's going on is, of course, most people are spending more time on the internet now than they're spending watching TV, you mm-hmm. know? I mean, it's a big change that people are spending more time with the internet than
mm-hmm.
that. Part of the reason is the commercials, though.
Yep.
You know?
Well, it's that, but I mean, you know, it's also that content on the internet is really interesting. I mean, you know.
I think it's also a different way of thinking. You know, it's a method of thought. You can travel from one thought to the next thought to the next thought to the next thought rather than sitting there and you're going, okay, I'm just locked into this one thing for the next half hour.
But I would say, for example, Pushing Daisies, right?
Mm-hmm.
I established last show. I love this show.
Yeah.
Right? Great show.
Yeah.
The amount of commercials on there drive me crazy, and it drives me away from the television.
Well, do you not have DVR then?
I have DVR now, but if I didn't have DVR, mm-hmm. I would not be watching it.
Right. Yeah.
I couldn't bring myself to watch any commercial television anymore.
Well, this is one of the things that they talk about.
That's a big statement.
Well, the ads are enormous now.
I don't think it's changed.
I really do think it has.
I don't think it's changed.
I really do think it has.
In terms of length?
The average sitcom now is like 18 minutes. I'm pretty sure it used to be like 22, 23.
Well,
you know,
let's do some research. Let's find out.
No, I don't think they've changed.
One of the things that they're saying is that advertisers are now starting to demand accountability. A lot of their revenues are starting to move towards the internet. And that what's going to start to happen is that in the future, they're going to be so much more specific where they're going to know, okay, this person saw this ad and they bought. They will have like statistics that specific.
Right.
That when you are forced to watch, as an interviewer, when you're forced to watch an ad on the internet, it's much more annoying to people than it is watching them on TV. People are used to watching it on TV, but on the internet, they're used to getting what they want right now, not having to sit through a 20-second, 30-second spot. And when they have to sit through it, it's really annoying to them.
Mm-hmm.
So they think – but at the same time, people don't want to pay for content on the internet. They're used to getting it for free. So they're trying to figure out how are things going to change in the future. One thing
subliminal.
Well, there will probably be more people sponsoring shows. So you'll have ads within the show. That's certainly true. And that's pertinent to our discussion. Pushing Daisies, James Bond. You know, we're talking, you know, I mean, James Bond.
Product placement.
Product placement.
Yeah, product placement heaven is James Bond.
So
watch Smallville these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
They're not even subtle. They're like, well, I'm going to try my AccuView contacts. And I'm not joking. That's the exact line.
Yeah. Oh, no. There was one that...
Really?
Yeah, there's one that cracked me up because Chloe rolls up in her car and she goes, Clark, don't run there. Take my Yaris. It's really fast.
Wow.
He's Superman.
Faster than the speeding bullet? Why, yes, it is.
Oh, my God.
Right. Yeah. But one of the things that they think is going to happen that's really interesting is they think that we, as the people who are watching commercials, are going to start picking the types of commercials we want to watch. We're going to say, okay, look, you know, I don't need to see baby food. I don't have babies, you know.
Yeah, it's the Minority Report version.
Right, that we will pick the type of things that, you know, so that we will be less annoyed by watching stuff, you know.
Yeah, well, that happens now. It's on iTunes, Amazon.com. All those things know what you're bought.
Well, does it change the type of...
Yeah.
Things you see, really?
Oh yeah,
I did not know that.
Actually, you get a lot of stuff for. There's a couple of places if you do search results and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. All the ads start changing to be
annoying too, though. Like 3 years ago, my mom wanted a foot bath for her birthday or something.
Yeah,
I bought a foot bath. Now every time I go to Amazon, it's like, see our newest deal on foot baths. I'm like,
yeah.
No.
Get the same thing about my penis enlargement.
So basically, it's really interesting to think about how things are going to change. What they're talking about is they really think that TV is going to be squeezed in particular. You know?
They've been making predictions on TV going that route for a long time.
Well,
trust me, they'll be able to make they'll be able to find the money and they'll be able to make the money. I guarantee.
I'm sure, but that these doesn't people mean that there will not be a transition period.
No, that is true.
And I mean, I've seen some dummy studies too.
Yeah,
I would love to know who sponsored these studies. That said,
IBM did.
No, no, not your study.
Yeah.
I'm saying the ones I'm about to talk about.
Right, right.
That said, going TiVoing through an ad did not affect the impact of the ad on the person at all.
Oh,
they
I read
still
this.
Registered what was being advertised and responded to.
I read this at in Wired magazine. Wired did a test. They had a group watch TV with a TiVo,
mm-hmm.
not telling them what they were being tested on, and a group just watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then they asked them questions about the ads, and they found out that both groups were shitty at answering the ads, the questions about the ads. And so at first they thought they had figured out something, but then they realized they hadn't really come to a conclusion, because it either meant the ads were made so well that you could fast forward through them and still get the information, or ads were made so poorly that if you watched them straight on, you still couldn't tell what the fuck they were for.
Yeah. I think that was for Roserum, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about this. There's actually two things. And one of the other things that they said about ads is it'll be coming in smaller spurts, so that it'll be harder to fast forward through them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see whether or not it turns into the George and Gracie hour.
All right. Anyway.
All right.
Cool.
Let's move on to
move on to our topic?
Let's do it.
Where we have to edit all the stuff out because
as long as we're dumbedly dumbing, I don't think it's illegal.
Yeah,
technically, you can't
dumb dumb to dumb someone else's song.
Well,
but actually, you know, we might actually be able to get away with it fair use for just a few seconds. I think that's true because
I was out of tune enough that is not their song.
It's 20% different.
It's definitely 20%
different.
All right, people are tuning out. People are tuning out. Stop.
All right, so this week we're going to discuss James Bond, the films. Matt's read all the books.
I've read all the books. I've read all the Ian Fleming books and the John Gardner books.
I've seen a bunch of the movies.
Oh, come on, Don. Let's get it together here.
I like James Bond.
We're going to do a...
But I see it as a movie.
Full on, from start to finish, marathon. Every James Bond movie. And we'll have snacks in between.
Are you going to include Chitty Chitty Bang Bang in there?
Written by Ian Fleming, but not a Bond movie.
Chitty Bang Bang. Written by Ian Fleming.
Oh.
You, me, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Okay, so let's talk just briefly. Let's just get this started. James Bond, the man, the myth. Why do dudes, and some of the ladies out there, why do dudes love the James Bond?
Well, I think the ladies got on board on the last James Bond big time.
He reset the clock, for sure.
I think his image of masculinity has always matched the time period it's in.
You know, I find a lot of similarity between James Bond and the Western hero. I mean, you know, he's this rugged individual.
Swaggers into town.
Who,
by the way, we're not going to discuss who James Bond is. If you don't know, get out from under your rock.
Yeah.
All right, moving on.
But I find that he's this guy who's a ladies' man. The women, you know, they like him. He's very
they like
strong.
Him. They like
love
him.
Jesus.
he's the quintessential guy that every woman wants and every guy wants to be.
Right. Okay, so is this essentially just a male fantasy, just straight out put on paper and film? Just, this is for you dudes out there who want to dream about shooting, blowing things up, and getting any freaking lady you want, and drive the coolest fucking cars and travel to the... Is that it?
Having read the books, I don't think that's what it was originally. I think definitely that is
what
it's become.
The books and the movies are two entirely different things.
No, it's not entirely.
Not no.
But you don't think James Bond is essentially Ian Fleming all just jazzed out?
Well, Ian Fleming was a bit of a womanizer and was in the SAS and all that.
He had the same, like, command. He was a commander. He was like, essentially Ian Fleming, but, like, freaking awesome.
Yeah, but the first, who was the first director? The first director of James Bond was the one who truly made him into what we consider James Bond. He was the one who said, oh, no, no, he's got to have a Brooks Brothers suit. Oh, no, he's got to drive an Aston Martin. Oh, no, 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 we need this girl to be, it's Moneypenny, you know.
Right.
We should have Moneypenny be hot. Well, we can't have Moneypenny be hot. We have to have the Ursula Andress be hot, you know. So it was like, but he was the one who truly made it.
But is it just a male fantasy straight out, or is there something else to James Bond?
He's the quintessential alpha dog.
Okay.
You know? He's a guy who is you know, physically proficient in a way where he can handle himself against basically anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he can fight someone. He's also alpha in the sense that he is so sophisticated that he can handle people verbally as well in terms of verbal sparring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the women want him for this reason, and he's not afraid of pain.
Mm-hmm.
In fact,
that was the original James Bond.
He is, you know, in his best incarnations, slightly sadomasochistic.
Is there something, you know, that is intriguing to males and maybe even females about having someone being that cold?
Absolutely.
You know, like the original James Bond, I'm not talking about the 90s PC James Bond. The original James Bond did shit to women, mm-hmm. to men, to anybody. But, you know, there was a lot of womanizing to get, quote, the job done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was very cold and calculating. It was, you know, is that a male fantasy? Is it a female fantasy? I mean, you know, I know we tried to get a female into this room, yeah. But we
tried to get
one.
Lisa.
So I'm sure we'll get lots of mail.
Yeah.
But, you know, is that part of the fantasy, being able to be cold?
Absolutely.
Like that?
I think that because I think we all have that editor. And I think also this is why, you know, because he also gets the coolest toys. Mm-hmm. James Bond also gets to be rich. He gets to have the best cars and everything like that. But I think we all have that editor that basically says, you know, you don't, the guy just bumped you. You don't need to just get up right up in his face,
right.
You know. Or
you have to call the girl after you've messed around with her.
Exactly.
You're not just done. Is that part of the male fantasy? James Bond's done usually. And moved on.
I think that's definitely
part actually.
Of that,
I don't know. In terms of the, in terms of each James Bond movie, I mean, when he ends, you have a sense of happily ever after with these people. He comes back and she's not around, but we miss that.
No, kind
of
but there's always a setup. He goes through usually two girls before he hits the one that he has a romantic relationship that kind of he attaches to.
Yeah,
but he has to go through like at least two.
There's the girl in the cold open always.
Girl in the cold open.
The O. James girl.
What's that?
But they don't really seem to care though.
Well, no, because we don't want to see we don't want to see that he's a big douchebag.
Well, yeah, but that's my point is that we don't see any type of impact in that sense. We don't see any type of sense of impact in that he's hurting anyone.
No, that's not true. They get killed all the time and he has He bangs them and they end up dead.
There's a pretty high body count.
They're casting gold and he's like, well,
she got casting gold.
Yeah. But that's not what I mean. And I mean that there's no sort of sense of emotional impact
on him.
On them, on the girls. And I mean, there's
because they're
emotional
dead.
Impact in the sense that they're dead. But oftentimes, I mean, it, just because he sleeps with someone doesn't come across like he's being an asshole to them, even though he is. You know. I mean,
that's our view of it. To them, they've just been able to bag James Bond. You know,
right.
You know, he's the one that they all want, but they can't, you know, get a thumb on him.
But I will say that when the girls die, I don't think that he comes across as if he doesn't care entirely.
He
does not care.
Except for his wife was the only one that he cared about.
Majesty's Secret Service?
I get the impression that he wants to take some revenge on people, that he's a little, you know.
I don't remember any. Besides,
well, he'll save them. There is a swashbuckling quality to James Bond.
Yeah, but if he walks into the room and he's like, "Oh, damn, she's covered in gold." Well, time to move on.
Yeah,
it's not like he doesn't freaking bat enough.
But if Blofeld said, you know, I'm going to cover her in gold.
True.
And I'm also going to let off this nuclear weapon. You know, the girl's getting saved first, and then he's going after the nuclear weapon.
True. That's true. Totally. That's true. Yeah. I would agree with that.
I mean, I have to sort of agree with what you're saying. You know, I mean, to me, I get the sense that there's a little moment where he goes, all right, motherfucker's going to be dead when he sees the body. He seems upset for the slightest bit of moment. The next minute, it's all gone.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, he's human, but, you know.
I would say he treats women who are in the game like that. Mm. The game of the spy business.
Xena on a top?
But the innocent bystander women, you know, the civilians...
Right.
Tend to get treated with a little bit more
the violin player, the cello player.
Well, here's the question I wanted to put out. You're discussing him as being the ultimate alpha male fantasy,
mm-hmm.
but the suaveness of the character speaks against that to me. He's one of the few male powerful protagonists that you can easily imagine him talking his way through a situation,
right?
As easily as applying the appropriate amount of violence.
But
to
alpha
it.
Male Not doesn't mean Conan. Much. It means in the modern day, it means being able to survive, and that means walk into the casino and go on. I'm going to beat these bitches.
I don't entirely agree. I think the alpha male fantasy is. Not just being able to survive, but making sure people understood you survived because of your superiority.
Yeah, but
whereas the James Bond suavity is about, I'm going to survive and I'm going to not necessarily make so many ripples. I'm going to move through, get the job done, and I don't need to leave a big wake. I'm good enough and self-secure enough in order to do whatever I need to do.
Well, it's interesting to think about where
I don't think that's the ultimate alpha male fantasy.
Hmm.
Alpha male fantasy is about leaving a wake.
People
need to know you beat them.
No, I don't think
so.
No,
I don't think that's the case. Alpha male is about this.
I totally disagree.
Alpha male is about basically when I mean, it's not about people.
What we're doing here in the room.
Alpha male is about, look, two people come together, and each of them, it's about fencing. It's about the two people trying to decide who is the most powerful person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, and that is what always happens with him and the villain. He always comes to the villain. They always meet. There's always this kind of like
the villain
stare
has
down.
Always planned for 35 years to have this thing, and James Bond just comes in and F's it
There's
up.
There's always a stare down where they talk. There's always the witty banter where each of them is trying to feel each other out. And what alpha male is about is the fact that when that happens, you know, a beta male is someone who will back down. A beta male is someone who will submit, but the alpha male is someone who will take that person on and not bat an eye, not flinch, and take them head to head all the way to the end. It's not about show. It's not about the show for everyone else around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's about dominating.
Dominating your opponent who's right in front of you.
I think it also.
Or a woman, and you don't need everyone else to know it. You just need them to know it.
I think it also bears weight to say that James Bond was created in the 40s, and that was the gentleman killer. You know, we're talking about a guy who was his archetype is the British gentleman killer, which is, you know, these are the guys who went out and killed all the Zulus. These are the guys, you know, and then went back and had a spot of tea.
Tea, yeah.
You know, this is definitely
like the formal killing spy who you know has the cane, the sword, you know, in the cane, and then.
And if you looked at it, James Bond, the way he's progressed through the years, he has always progressed through the years in a way that he can retain his alpha maleship. If the 40s and 50s was about being able to go in and they have nuclear weapon, well, I have a Walther PPK, mm-hmm. you know? Well, I can go in and beat you with that. Mm-hmm. It's not about who has the biggest gun. It's who uses it in the best way, man with the golden gun. And then you think about the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. He starts getting more and more gadgets because it becomes an American environment, and it is who has the biggest gun in the
But I think,
world.
You know, part of that is because I think James Bond had a hard time fitting into the 90s. The late 80s and 90s was the ultra PC, ultra, you know, and the womanizing, alcoholic, gambling, blah, blah, was considered foul.
Yeah.
And, that's...
You think that's why they did that?
And I think
I don't like those films, but I don't have a reason for why.
And I think part of it is they had to make James Bond a nice guy. He didn't go through two girls, and he met the cello player right away. And then they compensated by he was cool because he had cool gadgets.
Yeah. Well, I felt like that.
I think that's part of it.
And as much as I really like Pierce Brosnan, and I thought Pierce Brosnan should have been James Bond before Timothy Dalton. I know you like Timothy Dalton.
I like the first movie of Timothy Dalton movies.
But I really felt like they blew it with Pierce Brosnan, and Pierce Brosnan just became, you know, a showman for Tissot Watches.
I think he was the perfect
watches.
Bond, but they gave him bad scripts.
I don't blame Pierce Brosnan at all for those crap movies. I think he was fine. But you know what? I think that, for example, Daniel Craig, who I think we're getting out of the PC environment, ultra PC, and suddenly we had a James Bond who didn't have gadgets.
Yeah.
He was now
a little bit of a womanizer. He, you know, had he was a little more hardcore. He was a little he was raw compared to some of the stuff we had to see with Timothy Dalton and with what's his nuts.
Quentin Tarantino was in an interview and he talked about Bond in the way he'd like to see it, and it was almost exactly what the Daniel Craig movie was. And I was very I was like, I wonder whether or not somebody else who was, you know, the Broccoli brothers or whoever was associated with Bond and like went, hey, he's kind of Quentin Tarantino. He knows how to make a good movie with guns.
Well, the Bond franchise kind of went through a little bit with the what the Batman franchise went through.
No, true.
Which is to say that the Bond franchise started off with a character who had, you know, a personality. He had things that he was dealing with. And then it started to have to get bigger and, you know,
crazier,
and you know they had to escalate it, and now the so all of the gadgets had to be cooler and slicker, and it had to be an underwater car.
But
you know
it that took 20 years.
It did, and you're completely right.
Well, that's only 8 films.
But the villains had to do that. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, all and I think all of that escalation, you know, is really interesting because lots of things that happened in the Bond world became cliches. You know, shaken, not stirred. You know, it wasn't interesting anymore. It was just...
Well, not only that, but they took shaken, not stirred, and they started trying to one-up the catchphrase.
Yeah.
You know, and it like... there are a few moments in Bond that I've hated over the last few years.
Stop.
Okay.
Quiz time.
Oh, okay.
Breaking in. I have a quick quiz that might... I think you're about ready to
Don't
break in.
Don't lose your chain of thought, because okay. We're going to come back.
Yeah, and it might be in this quiz.
In Bond that I have hated.
It might be in this quiz. That's why I stopped you. Okay, this is a two-page quiz. Say buzz if you want to answer. Don't yell out the answer, but okay. Let me finish the question.
Say buzz.
So buzz, and then I will point you can answer. Okay. Jaws can be found in what two James Bond films?
Buzz, Moonraker.
Yes.
And
the one he premiered in.
Not Dr. No. The other Roger Moore one.
Moonraker's the only one I know.
Octopussy? No. I don't know.
Spy Who Loved Me.
Sorry.
What is the drink that...
geeks who are yelling that out at their car.
Yes, they're screaming at you. What is the drink that Bond named that's prepared by adding 3 measures of Gordon gin, 1 measure of vodka, 1 measure of blonde vermouth, shaken very well, and add ice-cold garnish and a slice of lemon named after the girl that was in the movie, the character... Should be very fresh in your mind.
From the most recent movie that we just saw, what was the character's name in Casino Royale? Who was the girl?
You are right, but you might want to buzz if you got the name.
It's a martini, but I mean...
Yeah, he names it after
Buzz
that.
Vesper. Okay.
Vesper.
You're snarky, Mr. Bond. Lightning round. Name which movie the snark was in. I think he got the point after spearing someone with a spear gun.
That was Never Say Never Again?
It was not the remake, but the original. Thunderball. Late. The character says, he suggests a trade, an egg for your life. Bond says, well, I heard the prices of eggs went up, but isn't that a little high?
That is... For Your Eyes Only.
You guys suck. Octopussy, the only movie with
Fabergé
egg.
Fabergé eggs.
Jesus
right.
Christ, you people. You'll know this one. I gave him the boot after kicking a man out of the back of the
Timothy
plane.
Timothy Dalton. Is it GoldenEye? No. That's Pierce Brosnan.
The Living Daylights. Oh, man, I don't even know if I should continue on. These are so easy. What was the original title of License to Kill? A, License for Murder. B, License Suspended. C, License Revoked. D, License Extended.
I believe it was License Revoked.
Yes. Ding, 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 ding.
That was the Gardner book.
That is true. What actor's last film playing Bond was Diamonds Are Forever, at least he thought? And what movie did he come back portraying the role?
Sean Connery.
Yep.
And Never Say Never Again.
Exactly. Song lyric challenge. Come on, Don.
What is it?
Song lyrics. Finish the phrase. Where are you? Where will we meet? Take my unfinished life and make it complete. Just like the... You guys don't know Jim?
I don't know.
Don't know any James Bond songs. No. Why are we even having this discussion this evening? All right, I'll do this for the audience.
I told you, I've seen a few of them.
Here's the audience. Another lyrics. Finish this. He has a powerful weapon.
Well, what's the answer to the last one?
Moonraker. The new one?
I don't listen to lyrics anyway.
He has a powerful weapon. He charges a million a shot. These are, if you listen to him, you should be able to get this.
A man with a golden gun.
Yes.
A man with a golden gun.
Here's the other one. I wasn't looking, but somehow you found me. My God, if you don't get this. I tried to hide from your love light, but like heaven above me, probably one of the most. I wasn't looking, but somehow you found me. I tried to hide from your love light, but like heaven above me.
For your eyes, I don't know.
Wow, one of the most famous James Bond ones ever, The Spy Who Loved Me. Nobody does it better.
Oh, come on,
people. Bond's original gun was the...
Walter PPK.
No, his original gun forced him to get rid of for the Walter PPK.
A Derringer.
No. It's another snub-nosed gun.
Hang on. Starts with a P.
Flare gun.
Beretta. Bond Girl Showdown. Name the movie. Pussy Galore.
That's got to be Octopussy.
Goldfinger.
So, I don't know. Now you've got me all flustered.
Christmas Jones.
That's Denise Richards.
Yeah. So that you guys all know that.
A really sucky one.
Was it Goldeneye?
No, but I'll give you a hint.
No, Christmas.
It's James Bond's family crest... All right, family motto.
Enough.
Yes, yeah. World is not enough. Yeah. And what does she do twice a year that the holiday doesn't?
She comes.
Yes, exactly. Solitaire. You guys remember Solitaire?
Solitaire. No. Solitaire was...
She read people's...
Cards.
Mm-mm.
No.
Live and Let Die. I don't think I'm going to continue.
No, come on now.
Okay, what was the name of the massive...
We suck.
What was the name of the massive Soviet counterintelligence organization that Bond was constantly working against?
Spectre.
Smersh. Does anybody know what Smersh means? Not in Russian, but the English translation.
Don't.
Death to Spies. Gadget Quiz. Crocodile Mini Sub.
Octopussy.
Yes, Octopussy. Peter got one. The Aston Martin DB5 with the ejection seat, smoke screen, bulletproof screen, machine guns, etc.
Golden finger.
Jetpack.
Jetpack was never seen ever again.
Well, no, he did that jetpack. Remember, he comes up out of the sea and the.
Okay.
See,
that was Thunderball. No. Well, this one I'm thinking is Thunderbolt. You're right. Never Say Never Again may also have been
that.
They
come up out of the...
Okay.
Fire out of the... Just
wrist dart.
Tubes.
I don't remember.
There was a recent one.
He's in a centrifuge, and he stops the centrifuge, shooting the wrist dart.
I don't remember this at all.
Centrifuge would be Moonraker.
That was in Moonraker?
Oh, yeah.
I gotta go watch.
Mobile phone with stun gun, flip open remote control, operating his BMW 750iL.
That's Pierce Brosnan.
That's the one with
Tomorrow,
Jonathan Price.
Yes, Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yes.
You guys fail. That was Bond quiz, you fail. All right, so where were we?
That was the things that I... Two things I hate the most about Bond was one was the I gave him the boot. And that's that line. And he's on a gigantic plane, and he's fighting this guy, and he knocks the guy off, and he grabs the guy's foot, and he pulls off his shoe.
But out of all James Bond movies, that's still one of the least silly James Bond movies. That was Timothy Dalton's first one, Living Daylights, and it was, I thought, a toned-down version.
What's the name of the most recent one where he actually has a long-ass fencing fight in the middle of the...
Madonna?
No, with another guy.
Was Madonna in a...
Not Madonna.
Bond film?
Yeah.
Madonna was in a Bond film?
Wasn't she in the... Yeah, one with the fencing thing?
I don't think
that was
that.
In Tomorrow Never...
I don't think Madonna...
There was
Madonna
another
was in a Bond
blonde
film.
Singer that was in something.
I thought it was Madonna.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't think
but,
so.
All right, one of the problems is
on the Bond Madonna
that it started to degrade into a formula. Mm-hmm. They started to degrade into, okay, we got to come up with cool gadgets. We got to come up with a cool villain who has diamonds in his face, you know. Ugh. We've got to come up with, and then we've got to come up with, like, lines for the guy to say that are clever, you know. And
It is formulaic no matter what. It's Bond saves the day. It's basically, yeah. You know, problem, establishment of girl, solve problem, blow things up, you know.
Well, let me ask a question. I mean, aren't the Bond films just basically pop culture films? You know, they're going to take on the flavor of the decade they're made in. And the flavor of the 80s was very kind of whimsical, silly, you know, over the top in a lot of ways. So you get things like A View to a Kill, where you have Grace Jones killing people with butterflies on fishing poles. You know?
So
I just remembered that.
The 90s turned a little more grim and gritty. And so okay. James Bond kind of turned in that direction sort of too.
So you're saying that sort of the recent flavor of, you know, sort of the world is the flavor of suck. And that's why they all sucked.
Well, I'm saying the 80s, are you going to disagree the flavor of the 80s was that?
No,
Christopher Walken as a Bond villain.
They absolutely take on some flavor of the world they're around. But, you know, I don't think that was what the problem was. I think the problem was that they got a little formulaic. And very clearly, you know, that's what we've done by breaking out of that. I mean, with the most recent Casino Royale. I mean, it's great. They found ways to break out of it. They found ways to take the character and give him, you know, some real personality again.
I'll be interested.
And real issues that he's dealing with instead of being being a cliche.
However, Casino Royale was about secrets and dealing with the war. It was actually about Iron Curtain. I mean, that was that was Bond, was an Iron Curtain Bond. And now we have another sort of inimitable foe in terrorism. And so basically they were able to cobble together the Ian Fleming original book and turn it into this. Yeah. I'll be interested to see what happens with the next film when it's not an Ian Fleming story. You know, Ian Fleming, with all of the Ian Fleming stories, are the Bond films that we like the most. As soon as it gets into late Roger Moore and then moves on, it starts, you know, even as much as I like John Gardner.
Did you know that Moonraker was the third book?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like 16 in the John.
I liked Moonraker, but it was pretty silly. I'm sorry.
True, but For Your Eyes Only, which was right after Moonraker, I thought was an awesome... Mm-hmm. I thought it was a great 80s Bond movie. You know, I mean, it had its problems, but, you know.
Well, I wanted to talk briefly about what makes a good James Bond gadget, what makes a bad James Bond gadget.
I tell you exactly what makes a bad one, because I've seen a couple recently.
Okay, name a couple bad things you saw.
Invisible fucking car.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Breaking the rules of physics.
what we all love about James Bond gadgets is going... is seeing something that is on the edge of either super just clever, like, you know, something hidden in something. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. But also maybe seeing what either the near future or maybe they might have it type of technology. Yeah. Not some freaking alien technology.
I didn't like when the Bond gadget happened to be – I mean, he's going to use it to save the day. He's going to use whatever gadget they give him. Yes. Fine. But I hated when it felt like that gadget was specifically made
and in fact, that,
for the one problem that he would have.
Those are two things that I wrote down, that the worst Bond gadgets, they feel convenient or like setup-y. Like he always has the right tool, like, and it's specifically for
He's
that.
He's got a laser in his wristwatch. Right.
And if they're overly fanciful.
That actually makes sense to me.
Yeah, the laser wristwatch could be used for a million things.
I'm 50-50 with that one. Yeah, that one, I'm, you know, like, it's a little fanciful for me, but,
cigarette or something just happened, like he, you know, happens to smoke at the right... There's always a little convenient...
Now, what makes a good James Bond gadget to me, and actually, you know, like, some of the worst 007 gadgets are things that you saw... being tested when he walked in, the things that he never got to use.
But those are great.
What,
because
the Desmond Llewellyn Q, or, you know?
Some of those are awesome because they're just
like
silly.
The phone booth trap, you know, or the couch that swallows someone.
Well, the thing with that was always
I mean, and what
the
what
ghetto
made that,
blaster that was a rocket
yeah.
launcher.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what made that cute was the, was Roger Moore's sort of pithy comments,
right?
Yes. As he walked,
and that was
it.
A joke scene. Like those were supposed to be bad. You know, the the missile launcher.
It was
launcher,
a comic relief moment.
The missile launcher cast.
What do I remember? I remember. I think it's an octopus where like a door slams and it's got spikes in it.
Yeah.
You know,
but you know, like for me,
shocking.
You know,
if shocking.
Whenever he happens to have a car that, for example, you know, can go underwater, you know, to me that was
the alligator. Come on, man.
Yeah,
yeah, but he had that scent. He had that scent because he needed it.
Right. Oh, he did.
It wasn't like here's an alligator thing. Hope you can use it. No, he was like, I need to do this spy thing. Q, could you please
send me something to get across the Ganges?
Now, the best gadgets tend to be multi-purpose. And they're pretty cool. When I was going back and reading about some of these, it's like the original Aston Martin and Goldfinger, it did a lot of stuff. It, bulletproof glass, a bullet shield, revolving license plate, smoke screen, oil slick, machine guns, tire shredders.
Tire shredder.
Yeah, the tire shredder.
That's some good stuff.
And a radar thingy.
And that was the thing. It came with like
Tire shredder. Didn't he use that on a girl to get her to like...
Yeah, to pull over.
Pull over.
He's like,
He ran her off the road.
So the thing is that like... If he's got something that's multi-purpose, you know, and it can do a lot of things, that makes sense. That feels like a spy gadget. It can do like 10 things, you know.
Right. So Swiss Army car.
I don't know how he's going to use it. It's not set up like, oh, that's what he's going to do. It's like he can do lots of cool different stuff that you don't expect.
What was it, the thing in the Daniel Craig? Didn't he have a defibrillator in his car or something like that?
That was a little set up.
It was
It was a little convenient.
Yeah.
I wish it was a little bit more like on the back of the seat or in a, you know, in a case underneath.
But
you know,
love the fact
that
they had a car. There was a medical system that linked directly to headquarters.
Yeah.
And they could do like medical stuff through, you know, remotely. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, that could be used for...
I actually love when they shock his heart and he wakes up. He's like, are you okay?
You know what? Another great Bond gadgets are the ones aren't given to him. The aerosol spray and the cigar to get rid of the snake that's about ready to get him, or he breathes the air out of the sunken tire, so he
that
can stay
was
underwater.
Fantastic.
And that was a shit movie.
Yeah,
well, that was a View to a Kill.
I think one thing I grieve. Just speaking of gadgets, as we move into the more realistic Bond with Daniel Craig. And don't get me wrong, I like the Daniel Craig movie, but I'm going to grieve for the passing of the fun gadgets.
Oh, trust me, they'll be back.
I loved Odd Job.
It will be back.
Throwing hat, Moonraker's teeth, Jaws' teeth.
I thought those were cheesy, actually, the teeth, but I love the hat.
But they don't belong anywhere else.
What about Teehee?
These gadgets, these one-shot gadget villains, the guy that throws buzzsaws from Octopussy.
They only belong
in Bond. They don't belong anywhere else.
What's the name of the famous actress who had the knife on the front of her shoe?
Oh, the old lady.
That's where it all started.
Old lady.
Yeah.
That's where it all started. The old
Odd
lady.
Job was before that.
The Venom boot from Russia with Love.
From Russia with Love.
And who was it?
From Russia with Love. It goes Dr. No. Oh, from Russia with Love.
Yeah. And it was so. I don't know who it was.
Then Goldfinger. Then.
Yeah. Dr. No is hilarious to me because there's so many people walking around in like Asian face.
He sits back and says she had her kicks.
That's nothing compared to You Only Live Twice. Where he marries the girl and he gets the eyelids
pushed down. Like, are you serious?
That's awesome.
But I think that I got a picture here of the Walter PPK and I think it really kind of helps. It's the essence of what a James Bond gadget is, which is it's a gun, but it's like elegant.
Yeah, well, he's got the Walther PPK.
You know, it's small. It's not like Rambo has these big freaking guns. Bond has guns, but he uses them. You know, like, he doesn't go out and just like, you know, use a submachine gun. He's not a big Uzi fellow.
Until Pierce Brosnan, in which case Pierce Brosnan was using Uzis all over the world.
He has a new Walther now. He's not using the PPK. I think he's using the.
I didn't like the remote control car.
I hated the remote.
I thought that was really cheesy, too. I thought it was, But here's another
one.
He's
in the back seat.
The ones that pissed me off.
Working it like a joystick.
I was okay with that.
The ones that pissed me off are the ones that are blatant product placements.
Well, there's that. Well, that and that is something that has actually really happened here. You know, we started off with the cars, okay? And then we got the watch. The watch has become a big deal.
The Tissot.
The Omega, okay?
Omega or Tissot?
There have been a couple. You know, I think. Then you got the Ray-Ban sunglasses that let him see through people's clothes. You know, they were X-ray. Then you know, now it's the new cell phone, the Ericsson cell phone. You know, it's interesting to watch. But Let me just name a couple more things that I thought were really cool really fast. He had the deadly briefcase with Russia with Love. It's an ordinary black leather case, except, of course,
with the money.
40 rounds of ammunition stored in a container that pop out from the bottom, a throwing knife that projects from the side, 50 gold sovereigns hidden in the lining, a bottle of tear gas disguised as talcum powder, magnetized to cling to the interior. It will explode if not opened properly.
Yeah.
You know? They also had the...
Release. Yeah. Release out.
Yeah.
Up.
The pen that if he, that was a grenade, if you pushed it the right way twice, you know, it was a grenade.
Right.
What else do you have?
Rocket cigarettes.
He had the cigarette, the one firing so cigarette stupid. That would shoot people.
It was not Roger Moore. Really? From Russia with Love, I think.
The rocket cigarettes was not Roger Moore?
No.
And then I just thought this one was kind of cute.
Didn't he have an exploding fountain pen in one?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Grenade pen.
No, like it shot the tip. I remember he killed a woman with it. It shoots the tip as a bullet, and it's then a gun, couple seconds later, it's supposed to explode.
Oh, maybe.
Yes.
You know.
That was Never Say Never Again, the remake of Thunderball.
Yeah, okay. Shoots her in the stomach or something.
Yeah.
There was also the car magnet. There was one part. I thought this was so cute. I had forgotten totally about it. But there's a part where a villain gets caught by a helicopter with a car magnet.
It just picks
him up and takes him away. You know,
we should actually put a link to MythBusters, because MythBusters has run a series of Bond gadgets through the ringer to see whether or not they work.
Yeah,
like they did the ejection seat, they did the oil slick, they did the smoke screen. You should find links to them. I'll find links to them and see, because they have a bunch of them on. Oh, they got removed from YouTube, so I don't know whether or not.
What about Bond girls?
Let's talk about the girls.
Yeah, what makes a good Bond girl?
Obviously
hotness.
Sex appeal. Okay, but. All the Bond girls have had sex appeal, almost. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of them have been sexy, okay?
And there's two categories of Bond girls, too.
Okay.
There's the just straight-out sex Bond girl, and usually you don't know very much about them.
Yeah.
They're alluring. They're almost as cold as he is. They're just there for
and
the sex
the Halle
only.
And there's the Halle Berry Bond girl.
Well, no, and they're never the lead.
Yeah.
They're never the lead. And then there's then the lead character who has a little more depth and sometimes
a little
is,
spy ability too.
Sometimes, but sometimes they're just you know.
Sometimes not.
Yeah, you know, sometimes they're straight. You know, just regular casual people like violin players.
But you know,
hey, she was an atomic scientist.
But a lot of times they're the opposite of him. Like you know, they're not. You know, especially in the last movie.
Well, I would say that there's they're always sexy. Sometimes they're exotic, which is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when there's that sort of exotic thing. But what they the best Bond girls have class and style, okay? And they're a worthy opponent to James Bond, at least mentally. They're not the ones that are going to jump in the sack with him right away.
Yeah, that's the first category.
They wait till the third day.
Yeah, that's the first category. But the main character doesn't.
No, actually, the main character in Casino Royale, for example. I mean, she's someone who's got class, style. She's tough. He was not.
Yeah, no, but she's the main character.
She's the Uber, though.
But there, remember, in Casino Royale, there was the one who just meets up and they go at it.
Sorry, I thought you were talking about.
Yeah, she's
the Uber reversing them.
And actually, the woman in Casino Royale becomes the one that he always goes back to her grave every year.
Yeah,
you know that becomes James Bond's one big weakness, isn't that his?
No,
that's his actual wife.
That's his wife who dies in Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Maybe the.
She gets killed and he returns, and that's his wife. But this one, the bitch is dead, and that's it. She betrays him.
Now, the worst Bond girls, a couple things that make a bad Bond girl. I mean, you can start with Denise Richards, bad acting. I mean, you know.
Yeah, and yeah.
Yeah, the bimbo factor is too high.
Yeah. You know? I mean,
Well, she was a bimbo, and that was the problem, and that was the acting, really.
Yeah.
Like, she was supposed to be a smart person, and.
Right. Well, it's not just.
She pronounced atomic. She's an atomic.
It's not just that. It's that, you know, the way they dressed her. She was a nuclear physicist or whatever, and.
Who couldn't say nuclear.
And she's in little tiny hot pants. I mean, she's not dressed like.
It was every moment of that movie was a bad decision.
It's when, usually when they don't treat their leading woman seriously.
Yeah. Yeah,
they didn't treat the movie seriously. It was made. That movie was made by bankers.
Yeah, I
guarantee.
I felt like they did the same thing with Michelle Yeoh, and what a waste of Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah,
you know what? I enjoyed her in that movie, but it was still a throwaway role.
Waste of Michelle Yeoh.
Lack of chemistry can be a big thing. I mean, you can have a gorgeous, gorgeous girl, but you know, like you're looking at her going, okay, I don't see it. They don't look like they're connected.
Yeah. Right.
And then what you guys just talked about, weak, no personality. I mean, she's got to be someone that could stand up to Bond. That you go, okay, you know, like these two people when they fence with each other. You know, she's going to get her digs in.
I'll show you a picture
Casino
of the
Royale,
new potential.
She wins a lot of the battles with him.
Right.
Verbal battles.
I'll show you a picture of the new potential Bond girl. She's ridiculous.
What about, I can't even remember who the girl was in Moonraker. She must have been pretty flabby as a Bond.
Flabby?
The only woman I remember from Moonraker is the woman that Jaws
hooks
ends
up
with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
the pigtails.
Octopussy was a pretty good because she was kind of a semi-villain.
She's the one who has that sash dress.
I seem to remember liking Terry Hatcher.
She jumps off of the balcony and uses her dress to unravel herself down to the ground.
I always thought
I found her incredibly attractive. Was that No, that's the one with the Fabergé eggs.
Yeah, Octopussy.
That's Octopussy?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, she steals the egg right there.
Which was the one Terry Hatcher was in?
That was
Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah.
Jonathan Pryce.
Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yeah.
The funny thing is I'm James really good Bond. With James Bond movies until you get to the
James
Pierce
Bond
Brosnan
the
years. They're all the same movie to me. I cannot figure those out.
See, that one was the exception to me. That was the first Bond movie I walked out of going like, that was in the positives.
Really? You know? James Bond versus the Media? The Jonathan Pryce one?
Yeah.
I thought James Bond versus the Media was atrocious.
You just said you liked it.
No.
Oh, no, wait, you didn't. No, Michelle Yeoh.
No, I did not.
But, well, like, Michelle Yeoh was the love interest one in that one. And at the end, I remember the entire audience, when she rolls over after they've escaped and goes, oh, James,
like,
and they start making up, everyone in the audience is just like, really?
Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
Really?
Wow.
Well, shall we move on to villains and talk a little bit about them?
Yeah.
Yes.
The best thing I ever heard as a comment on James Bond villains was that there was a guy who was doing a spoof on James Bond, and he's playing this villain, and he's like, good doesn't know how to plan. Good couldn't get out of college. It's like, you know how to blow things up, but try making a factory this size. You know how many people I have to pay?
An underground lair doesn't get built itself.
You know how many cameras I had to do? You know how wiring problems? And you just blow it all up? I love that.
I think the first most important thing for me about just this, and this is the setup of the movie, is I really want the scheme to be pretty brilliant. Like, Goldfinger poisoning not stealing the gold.
Yeah.
Poisoning the gold to drive the prices of his gold up is freaking awesome.
Yeah.
That's a kind of a good idea.
Yeah.
Like, you thought he was going to steal the gold and that wasn't the plan.
Right.
That was perfect. It was a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's those little things as a basis for your bad guy.
What was Dr. No's big thing?
Dr. No had the...
Moonraker was eugenics. Dr. No,
he had the missile, which he was on the island, and he was
I cannot remember what Dr. No is saying.
Yeah, that's
Dr.
So
No's
bizarre.
Film was what they based the video game Evil Genius on, like all of the island and everything.
Well, yeah, he had the island with the mm-hmm. he was like, that was the first
the tiki's
evil
with,
lair,
the tiki's with the cameras in them and everything like that.
I think
go ahead.
I would say that your villain, you're right, the plan is definitely a part of it. But there's a couple of things. First of all, your villain has to have a really clear psychology. They have to have a way that, like, and they tend to be vicious.
I mean, Telly Savalas was Blofeld, right? Was he?
No.
Who's the ball? He was, because who played Blofeld?
I think he
Blofeld?
Actually changed in the series.
No, yeah, Blofeld definitely changed.
Yeah, Telly Savalas was in... Man with the Golden Gun, but I don't think he was. What's his face?
Who is the guy that he marries these two people, realizes the guy is betraying him, so he feeds the guy to the sharks, rapes the guy's wife, and then murders her.
Oh, the shark one? That's Timothy Dalton, where Felix Leiter is the one who gets.
Felix Leiter is his CIA, counterpart. James Bond's Robin to his Batman.
Yeah, I mean, like that. That's some serious psychology.
That movie's terrible, though.
Well, but that doesn't mean the villain's not great.
Yeah. Do you remember who that villain was, though?
No, but that moment was great. I remember that moment.
But another thing about a villain is, I think also a strong having a strong icon. Like, I know it's sometimes silly, but Goldfinger.
Yeah.
Who
a gimmick?
Who collects gold?
Yeah.
Or Octopussy? Or
Blofeld had Spectre.
Doctor No. Yeah. And these are like, and you look at him, you go, okay, there's a dude with a white cat stroking, and that's like, you could take a snapshot of that and know he's a bad guy.
Yeah.
Right.
Like that. I don't even remember the movie that well. It wasn't so great, but it was the most recent one before Casino Royale. They had a Korean villain whose face was studded with diamonds.
Right.
Yeah. I thought that was
Rick Yoon.
I thought the look was neat, and it was memorable.
I thought that was awful. I hated that.
It got into
the look or the movie?
I hated the look. I thought it was trying to take that Goldfinger thing and making it
turning
too
it to
big.
The first Bond villain that I really liked that I thought they really screwed up with.
Like, they really couldn't get the diamonds out of his face. Right. They really couldn't take the diamonds out.
I wouldn't take the diamonds out. I think they look good.
The diamond is just too close to the brain. No, it's not. It's on the surface of your face. Come on. It's right there where I could see it.
Was it Sean Bean? I can't remember the actor who played 006 in one of the films who had turned rogue. He was a rogue.
That was a great villain.
I thought that was a great villain. And they could really, they could really go somewhere with that. And then they didn't.
Because, he's higher up than 007.
Do they promote?
Yeah. 001 is supposedly the badass.
Really?
I did not know he's the seventh on the list.
What's your guys' favorite cold open?
Favorite because it's corny or
no, favorite
because
it's just
cool.
Awesome.
Well,
either way.
I really like Casino Royale. I think that's one of the best because of the use of parkour in the film. I thought it was one of the best cold opens.
That wasn't the cold open.
It's not?
The cold open was
in the black and white. Right. Yeah. Okay, well, then that doesn't count. Then I'd have to say Roger Moore skiing through the Alps.
No, that wasn't a cold open either.
He's talking about...
Yeah, it is.
Hold on. You're misunderstanding. He's talking about the musical intro at the beginning where he's walking around, he turns and shoots.
Before that. There's always a story before
that. There's
always
that. A tiny
yeah,
little
the
story.
The mini story that has nothing to do with
Oh, I know what you mean. Where he parachutes out.
Spy Who Loved Me.
Spy Who Loved Me.
I'm with Matt on that one. I agree. Same one.
Yeah. I like two of mine, and they're not... some of them are cheesy, but I love Moonraker, where he's on the freaking plane, and they all jump out, and Jaws is there, and they all have parachutes, and they say, bye, and they all jump out of the plane. He doesn't have a parachute, and he fucking jumps out and chases one person with a parachute down, Jaws, wrestles the parachute off of him in midair, and then pulls the parachute. I was like, he's dead. James Bond's dead. There's no way he's going to get out of this crashing plane. And he fucking jumps out without a parachute. I thought that was so awesome. And the other one is the first Timothy Dalton movie.
In the cello?
No, that's where he's on training with all the other 00s. And they parachute out onto the Rock of Gibraltar. And they're doing a training exercise. Little do they know, with fake guns, with, pink guns. Little do they know, there's a spy on there with a real gun eliminating them all. And they go through all the James Bonds. They kill all the 00s. Kill all the 00 agents. And it's just him against this other guy with a real gun.
Right.
Then he crashes through, getting this car chase, crashes over a fucking cliff. He parachutes out, lands on a boat with a hot chick, calls in and says, I'm going to be late. And he says, and my name is James Bond. It was the first introduction to Timothy Dalton. That was awesome. Yeah, those are my two favorites.
I'll see that again. I don't remember it.
Oh, it's great. I've got it.
That's a great,
it's a great intro because it was all nighttime.
I think I need to comprehensively watch the series again.
It's fun.
I don't really remember it.
Yeah, it would be a good thing to just sit down and watch it from the beginning and see.
I need to watch Moonraker again because there are like four things I was like.
That thing's like 4 hours long.
Yeah.
Okay, before we close it up, how do you think James Bond is going to survive now that it's been reset? I think it's been reset.
I think it definitively has been reset. I am nervous that they're going to screw it up again.
Now, the rumor is this is going to be a sequel. Yeah. The first James Bond sequel. In other words, Casino Royale 2. Remember
I know,
Casino
I know
Royale?
It's not Casino Royale. I know the title at least not Casino Royale.
Okay,
too.
Okay.
Yeah, it's got some strange like number title right now.
Oh, okay.
You know.
So what do you guys think it needs to be?
I think it needs to follow the exact same vein that that he set up, and that
which
it
is
well, Daniel Craig said he would not do Bond unless it was delving into the character of Bond and who he was within the context of doing an adventure, not an adventure that he sort of went along for the ride on.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I feel like they follow that rule, I think it'll be a good Bond. I think as soon as they jump out of that, we're in trouble.
Okay. I think he should be very angry. You know, mm-hmm. like, and, well, I'll tell you what a good thing to do would be, if he's this guy who's really angry, who is mean and angry at women, you know, and then, he meets someone in the course of it who breaks that down a little bit.
Her Majesty's Secret Service, sort of
like? You know.
I like that he's reset. I want him to be cold and calculated and like kind of original Sean Connery Bond. I don't know about mean. But I do want, I don't want the silliness to come back. I really felt like this was a Bond, this last movie was a Bond for adults.
Yeah.
It was back to being an adult film instead of like a high school film.
Yeah.
Like you didn't feel embarrassed that you were going to a Bond film.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Octopussy.
Yeah.
You know, know, like you're going to shoot your little laser, blah, you know what I mean? This one felt like an adult movie.
Felt like a spy movie.
Right. It felt like a real spy movie. Yeah. I'm fine with gadgets. Bring the gadget bags. Bring the girls back. Yeah. Bring some interesting villain back. But don't just make sure it's not silly. Do not turn it up because the last movie did, you know. Oh, they like cars? We'll put extra cars in there. Oh, you like women? We'll put, you know what I mean? How they get
9 women in.
They like turning it up the volume because they think it means more money.
And again, I know a lot of you don't agree with me on this one. And, I would like to see a little bit more of the traditional James Bond suavity come back. Casino Royale.
I thought Daniel Craig
I know you all
suave.
Think it was there. I didn't see it. I thought he did a good job portraying a realistic level of suavity.
Mm-hmm.
But it's James Bond. He's the icon.
Well, maybe
of
it'd be
suavity.
Great to see him grow into that some more. That would be kind of.
But
fun.
You don't think that?
It's also the only. He's the only action hero that is suave.
No, because
the rest of them are kind of.
But don't you think real suave is more suave than a guy who looks like he's a douchebag, like just kind of like cheese?
I don't think cheese when I think.
Hang on. I think that there's a type of suave that's not cheese.
And I do too.
I do think that they called him a blunt weapon in that.
Film.
I think he very much was a blunt weapon in that film.
Yeah, they looked like a blunt weapon that they shaved and they put in a monkey suit.
Oh, come on.
No, it's true.
Well, I think I disagree, but I would say that there is he wasn't as polished as he could have been in that film.
Hmm.
I thought that was a good choice that worked for the character that film.
He's learning. I mean, like Shaken Not Stirred. He never knew that.
But the thing
that's something he's developing
within the context of the book. James Bond is not urbane.
I don't read the book, so I don't care.
I
know the movie James Bond,
right?
And that's what I want.
Well, I want the book James Bond.
But I want to see a guy who looks like he could save the world and walk into a casino.
Yeah.
And the problem with Pierce Brosnan, like if you put Pierce Brosnan and Daniel Craig in the room together,
casino,
you go,
Daniel Craig kick his ass.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the problem with Pierce Brosnan is he ran like a girl. He fucking ran like a girl. He's a suave looking dude. That dude is a
standing
good looking boy. I'll put it up
still,
there.
Yeah,
he's but when he runs, he ran like a girl.
So
I'm sorry. I'm just gonna throw it out there.
So with that Bond, we needed a little bit more of the brute.
Yeah.
With this brute, we need a little bit more
class.
Of
the
Bond.
Okay.
I think that's a good place to start because now he's got some place to go, which is lovely.
I'm fine with that, but I need him to go there. For
bring
him
it.
To be Bond.
And Daniel Craig can be charming. So.
I hope so.
For him to be Bond,
he charmed the hell out of Peter one night, so he knows.
Why, yeah.
Him over a kitchen table.
now.
All right. Anything else?
You guys' minds went.
It was Matt. Matt crossed the line.
Yeah, but you pushed him halfway there.
Okay. What is our mini bit?
Our mini bit is actually given to us from WNYRPG Jim from the forums.
Okay.
Here's a hypothetical situation. You're on a vacation to a faraway destination, traveling by air nonstop. As you're waiting to board, you hear an announcement that the flight's overbooked, and anyone willing to get bumped to the next one, please come to the counter. You jump up and go to see what the deal is. At the counter, they tell you you'll be on the next flight in first class, and you cheerfully agree since you're in no hurry and it's a nonstop flight. 2 hours later, you've just sat down your luxurious first-class seat on the plane, and who would sit down next to you but the one person, the one celebrity you've always wanted to meet and talk to. Your jaw drops, it's the chance of a lifetime, and your friends are going to freak when you tell them. And now you've got 8 hours alone with this person. Who is it? And what do you do? What do you try to get the celebrity to talk about?
Alive or dead?
Wow.
I think we should stick with alive. Because if you go with
dead,
I
want to hear like Gandhi and all that shit that everyone keeps
Well, you know, that's pretty easy for me, actually. And it's such a white bread choice, and generic, but it'd be Steven Spielberg in a heartbeat.
I was going to say the same thing.
You know, because...
Not Ridley Scott for you?
I think I would maybe pick Steven Spielberg over Ridley Scott.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about him is that he is such a talented person.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been able to have a family, have what seems like a very healthy home life, and that he's been a good human being for the world. He's done good things for the world. I mean, he's just, on so many different levels, seems to have everything balanced and working well. So he totally would be the person I'd want to talk to.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
Okay, so I have a follow-up question for both of you then. You're sitting next to Steven Spielberg, but you have a choice of only one of two different things. Are you pitching or are you learning?
I'd be learning.
I'd be learning because the pitch isn't going to work. I mean...
Yeah, okay. Not in a hurry. I don't think... You know, I would be trying to be so careful not to tell him any idea because I wouldn't want to offend him or be that guy. You know, if he asked me, I would, but... You know, I would not, and I would be like, you know, seriously, are you sure? Because I don't want to be that guy, you know?
I mean, I don't mind being the guy if he asked. It would be more just being able to ask him questions about stuff. I would definitely want to pick his brain because, you know, I can pitch to all sorts of people. Pitching to him isn't going to be necessarily any better than pitching to a lot of other people who have actually probably have more of a chance for something to happen. You know what I mean? At that point, it's like pitching to freaking God about, you know, your script. I mean, you know, what is he going to do? So, anyway.
Machina.
I don't know. I'm torn between, like, somebody who's of great importance to the world, and the Dalai Lama, and somebody who's great importance to me, you know, in my profession, which would be Anthony Hopkins, you know?
Hmm. Interesting.
But it's just because the Dalai Lama, I would love to just sit there and go, and what was this like? And what was this like? And because the guy has been through the ringer. He's been a world leader. He's been ostracized his entire life. He's met every major world leader over the last, you know, half a century.
Well, both of those are important to you. So not one. Right. Anthony Hopkins isn't more important to you.
Right. Well, Anthony Hopkins would be specific about one very specific aspect of my life.
Right.
Whereas I feel like the Dalai Lama, I would be like, and spiritually, what about this? And, you know, politically, what about this? And environment, what, you know, I feel like he would give me perspective where I feel like Anthony Hopkins would give me information, you know?
I think my second choice would definitely have to be Megan Fox.
I'll second that. I'll definitely second that.
So what
that.
Did you settle on, the Dalai Lama?
I don't know. I mean, Anthony Hopkins has been alive long enough to have worked with, you know, Laurence Olivier and with Steven Spielberg. So, I mean, I could just talk to that guy all day long and just be like, wow. And what about – although I feel like I'd be Chris Farley on
– Remember that time when you
– Yeah, when he was on Saturday Night Live. Remember when you were in Silence the Lambs? That was awesome. I feel like I'd just be that guy all day long.
But he's stuck in the seat with you, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
What about you, Don?
When Jim put this question up, it was, you know, I've had the most advanced planning of any of the four here because I brought the damn question in. But the truth of the matter is I find it just as hard to settle on a single person.
Mm-hmm.
I think the person I'm ashamed that of all the people in the world I could pick, I'm picking
Chung Lee is not a real person.
That is of a professional thing. Right?
Okay. Yeah.
I would really be more proud of myself if I could say yes, the Dalai Lama or the Pope or someone of that circumstance. But honestly, I have to settle on probably a less popular personality than anyone else has put forward, J. Michael Straczynski. Not because I'm a Babylon 5 fanboy. That is not the case. But because this is someone who's had a very successful writing career in every medium that I'd be interested in working in. every single one of them.
Even journalism?
He has had, huh?
Even journalism?
I am not especially interested in writing for journalism.
That's what I'm saying. He was a very successful journalist.
Well, not my thing, but unless you include essayist, you know?
Okay.
But that's the fact that, you know, he was able to have such diversity and not just be a successful writer, but creator, you know, have these ideas go out and become successful forces in each medium. That I find very admirable.
Nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely.
I mean, we didn't ask you if you're going to save the world. We just wanted who you're going
to
sit next
to.
Yeah. So you should definitely go to our forums, and everyone should put who they would like to sit next to in first class on a plane and why. Don't just throw out names. We want to know exactly why and the type of questions you would
and
ask.
And thanks
person.
Again to WNYRPG Jim, who is one of our longtime supporters on the forums, has done tremendous work in helping us keep the forums running, getting it up in the first place. Hearty thank you from all four of us here to you.
And can we do a mail forums episode here soon? Where because I would love.
Bag is full.
We've got all sorts of mail we need to read. Some people lambasted us for being too liberal, which I totally agree with.
We got a lot of them.
Absolutely,
that's
true.
Because you guys,
absolutely,
we were all going off, and you know, we deserve
to get
a little,
my friend Mike up on here, who's
I'm gonna
raging
be a fascist
Republican.
Fascist. We'll read some of those here coming up. Maybe next time.
All right.
We'll do it.
I have one last link before we go.
Okay.
In the James Bond tradition, 2 8-year-old geniuses have invented wedgie-proof underwear.
I saw those little kids.
It is called, it's 10 years too late, but it's probably 20 years too late for me, but it's the Ripaway 1000.
Yeah.
As the name implies, it tears into two pieces when a wedgie is attempted. It leaves the playground bully reeling with a handful of skid marks. You know, that's it. That's all he gets.
Yeah, he pulls it up and it just comes right out of the back of the pants.
It's two pieces are held together by Velcro.
So it's basically stripper underwear for elementary school students?
Kinda, pretty much. Yeah. I saw the two kids, and one kid, like, you know, demonstrated on his brother. Pulled it right out.
What cracks me up is the kids both look like you at that age.
What are you saying? If I only had that underwear. Alrighty. Well, that's another Geeks On episode.
Yes.
I hope you all have a great geek week coming up.
Maybe next week we really will do Geeks On Bondage.
Okay. All right.
Thank you guys for coming out. And
we'll
wasted yet another almost 2 hours with us. But it's been a lot of fun.
Exactly. Excellent. See you guys later. Bye.
Rock it out.
Geek it out.